Do I know you?
No. No. But you doubted me.
I'm sorry, I have to go.
No need to leave yet.
But I'm late.
You are not content with the stories, so I was obliged to come. Be my victim. Be my victim. I am the writing on the wall, the whisper in the classroom. Without these things, I am nothing. So now I must shed innocent blood. Come with me.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast, and this week is week 3 of 31 Days of Horror. Ooh, yes. And with me today again, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
I'm not burnt out. I'm not burnt out at all.
Trish Coughlin.
Hey, everybody. All the horror.
And Jeff Omega.
Good evening.
Okay, I'm going to apologize to everybody from last week because I said I would drop episode 2 on Friday and that didn't happen. But I also gave you the caveat of things might happen. Things did happen. And we've had to move it to our regular schedule. So these episodes are actually going to be dropping every Tuesday as normal. Sorry.
To be honest, that's the tagline of 2020. Stuff yeah. happened.
Stuff happened. I'm still not okay. But anybody who's had kidney stone pain understands mine right now. And I am doing this actually while stuff's going on. So, well, I don't know. This could be an interesting episode. There might be some legit scream during a horror episode.
He's living his own horror movie right now.
Right? But I'm going to try to make it through this the best way I can because we got some great watches to share with you, along with probably some not so great ones from all over the world and all over the place. Because, yeah, we don't just sit and watch Hollywood movies because, yeah, we're definitely going to be disappointed if we do that.
We're international. Yes, we are. I don't think I have a single. Oh, I have two U.S. films in my last 2 weeks.
There you go.
Out of 15 films, so totally international.
Okay, so this week we are going to be in week 3. That means 17 through 24 of our lists. Jeff, you're first up.
Oh, alrighty then. Well, the very first movie that is on the docket this week is actually one that we were not going to talk about until this week, The Mortuary Collection.
I did that one last week.
Yeah.
As did I. Well, actually, I don't think I've talked about it yet. It is on my list. I haven't talked about it yet.
It was a mystery as to when it was going to show up, and the answer was immediately next.
Actually, no. When did I watch this thing? I've already forgotten about it. Oh, yeah. That's going to be my final week on number 28.
Yeah.
So all three of you watched that one?
Apparently.
I think so. And Jeff watched it like right after I did. Like, so, I was 16, he's 17.
You guys were really in sync. That's like the third movie you guys almost watched at the same time.
We're connected.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I have zero crossover with any of you this year, I think.
That's just nice. That's always the goal, a little bit.
I think there might be one, but... But yeah, we talked about Mortuary Collection in the first part of 31 Days of Horror. But Jeff, you didn't join in too much on that. So what did you think about it?
You know, it was good. I mean, like all anthology movies, there were some bits that were better than others. But that being said, I thought it was a pretty good throwback to some older style horror anthology movies, like some Amicus style kind of framing. Clancy Brown was fun in it. And I'd say it's worth checking out if you like fun horror anthologies. The one where the guy became pregnant and gave birth was pretty good.
Yep.
But yeah, I gave it, I think, a 6.5 out of 10, possibly maybe a 7. You know, it was good, but it wasn't the best, especially because I followed it up with The Torture Garden, which is a movie from 1967 that is an Amicus anthology. That was directed by Freddie Francis, and he also directed Tales from the Crypt, the original anthology, as well as Vault of Horror. He did a lot of the Amicus anthology stuff. It was great. Written by Robert Block, starring Burgess Meredith. Probably my favorite anthology I watched all month.
Outside of Burgess Meredith, who else was in that?
I think Jack Palance, he was in it.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And I think that they were actually the two biggest names in it. There was a lot of British actors. But ultimately, like, the real star of the show was Robert Block in terms of his writing. In some ways, it was kind of Creepshow-esque because basically it was Robert Block taking a bunch of his short stories and then adapting them for an anthology that is pretty colorful and stylistic. So I'd say if you like Creepshow, it's not comic book themed, but it has a lot of similar vibes. And there's one story in there, The Man Who Collected Poe, that had, you know, old Amicus and horror mainstay Peter Cushing in it, which was really good.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, highly recommended. I would say if you like Creepshow and if you like other Amicus anthologies, The Torture Garden is, yeah, it's really good. I think it's one of my favorite Amicus ones I've seen. Yeah.
What's the framing device on Torture Garden?
So it's kind of fun. So Burgess Meredith is basically a guy who... He's kind of done up to have like Lucifer type hair. Like he has like a pointy mustache. And I think his hair, he might even have like the wings on his hair. And he wears like a different suit all the time. Like every time it comes back, he's wearing a different outfit. And he's supposed to be kind of like the devil. I think his name is Diabolo. It's like, a, you know, come one, come all into my house of horrors. So he brings them in. And then there's this statue, which is a representative of the goddess of fate. And he's like, come and look into her shears and you will see something that may or may not happen to you. And each person goes and looks into the shears. And then the anthology is every story is what that person sees when they look into the shears of fate.
Cool.
Yeah.
That actually does sound like fun. As we all know, I'm not a big fan of anthologies, but I might have to check that one out. I love the name too, The Torture Garden.
Yeah, no, it's good. And I didn't realize until I watched this movie, but Freddie Francis, I really like him as a director. A lot of the best Amicus movies I've seen are all directed by him. And he's a pretty prolific British horror director of the 60s.
Nice.
And I followed that one up with Eight-Legged Freaks, which is super fun. That was a movie I saw a lot of trailers for when it was coming out. And I always wanted to see it. And I finally got around to it this year.
I love that movie. It is so much fun.
I love the way it pokes fun at the whole genre in a lot of ways, but it still pays homage at the same time. It's really weird how it works, but it does work, even though it does have David Arquette in it.
You know, I was just going to say, I've really grown to like David Arquette over the years. Yeah. I think he's a pretty interesting guy, but as a person, maybe more than an actor.
He's really self-aware. He knows exactly who he is, and he picks roles based on that. I mean, he does movies like Ready to Rumble because he loves wrestling. And that's why he does it, because he wants to. It's not because he's trying to make himself a superstar. And I respect that immensely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I actually found out when I was looking up stuff for this movie that there's just a documentary that just came out called You Can't Kill David Arquette, and it's about his return to wrestling.
Nice.
But recently, like within the past couple of years, he was doing a wrestling match, and he accidentally got stabbed in the neck with like a broken table leg or something. And almost died during a wrestling match. Pretty crazy. But
the title of the documentary.
Yeah. But it was a good movie. I remember at the time when it came out, it really got slammed for having bad CGI special effects. But I thought they held up surprisingly well, like more than I thought they would.
It's going to look a little dated now, but I thought it looked really good then. And it still holds up. There's actually a surprising amount of practical in that movie as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing I'm noticing, actually, watching a lot of movies from this kind of era, you know, early 2000s. There was a lot of movies that were getting slammed for bad CGI at the time. And you go back and revisit them now, and there's actually a lot more practical effects in those movies than now, now that we even have better CGI. Yeah.
Well, and I would have to say, like, early 2000s, some of that CGI is better than some of the crap I'm seeing come out now.
Yeah.
Because they weren't lazy. They were trying to make it good, and it showed.
I think it's also part of the essence of the movie, where it's making fun of, like, these 50s creature features. Like, you're going to try to do it kind of the best you can, but having it look a little weird, fake, and frayed, yeah, is part of the charm.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. Thanks for saying that there,
oh,
Trish.
No worries.
That was exactly what I was going to say, is it should look just a little bit fake, because that's the way those creature features looked.
Totally.
And Trish has got one right on the nose later in her list.
Yep.
And yeah, but bonus.
I'm so glad
facts,
she watched that, by the way.
We'll get there.
We will.
Yeah, and a super young Scarlett Johansson in Eight-Legged Freaks, too. It's like her second or third ever role.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that. I haven't seen that in a while. Cool.
Yeah.
And she went on to be Black Widow. Go figure.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that. It's really funny.
She's got a thing for spiders.
Yeah. So I followed up Eight-Legged Freaks with actually the first ever Herschel Gordon Lewis movie I've ever watched, The Wizard of Gore, and it was great.
I've seen that.
Never seen it.
I've seen the remake, but I've never seen the original.
Oh, nor have I.
So with Herschel Gordon Lewis movies, I've seen a couple now. I think there's two on my list. I was explaining to a friend that if you basically picture 1960s Batman with Adam West, but add like nudity and very gratuitous gore, that's kind of what Herschel Gordon Lewis's movies are like. So The Wizard of Gore is like this incredibly campy, super brightly colored movie about a wizard, a magician who it's a little bit unclear. It's like a guy in his 20s who's playing a magician in his 60s. So he has like, you know, white hair dye and all that stuff. And so the audience, he hypnotizes into thinking he's not killing his volunteers, but actually he is killing his volunteers or something like that. And there's just a lot of, here, I will cut a woman in half with a chainsaw. And then he actually cuts her in half. And then he like picks up her guts and shows it to the camera. And it's pretty ridiculous, but it's super fun. The main actor who plays the magician is like hilarious. It's very, very melodramatic.
The premise sounds pretty interesting. That would be good to, I don't know. That'd be something to revisit. The premise sounds like something that would really kind of be cool to explore.
Well, there is a remake, so
yeah,
a good episode.
As I said, we'll maybe explore that down the road, because I have seen the remake. But
yeah.
Well, we can cover that more in full length at some point. For sure.
Absolutely. After that, I watched kind of an interesting gem called House of the Damned from 1963. And I got it at Value Village. It was like a nice DVD release. I'd never heard of it before. But it was a surprisingly creepy twist on a haunted house movie from the early 60s. And I guess like the basic idea is there's like this house that people think is haunted, but actually there's a bunch of circus freaks who are secretly living in the house. And there's some like pretty good creepy shots where it's like super dark. And then there's just like this black silhouetted, long haired, like no leg person, like dragging themselves across the floor towards the people. And it was like surprisingly unnerving for an early 60s movie.
Sometimes that old horror is more unnerving because they have to make you uncomfortable without using a lot of like really extravagant special effects. And sometimes that's more effective. Mm-hmm. I missed the 13 Ghosts episode, but one of the things that I wanted to mention if I had been participating was that the original 13 Ghosts makes my wife more uncomfortable than the new one, because it's all about mood and mm-hmm. story. Even though it's terrible, it's not a good film. It's still sets a tone really well. And that's because mm-hmm. they had to, by using lighting and dialogue and mood rather than showing you stuff.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, and this is definitely worth checking out if you like 1960s haunted house style movies. There was kind of a period for a long time where you'd go to watch a haunted house movie, I think from the 30s till probably the late 60s, where they all had the exact same twist, which was, oh, the house isn't actually haunted. It's something else. And this is one of those mm-hmm. movies, but it's one of the better ones of that I've seen.
Scooby-Doo!
Yeah.
Wouldn't have gotten away with it. It weren't those meddling kids.
And I'm pretty sure that the guy who played Jaws in James Bond is in it as well, actually, as a strong man.
Cool.
And after that, I probably watched the worst movie of the month. I wasn't expecting it to be great, but it wasn't great. It was Ghosts on the Loose, a.k.a. Bela Lugosi meets the East Side Kids.
Yeah, that sounds bad right there.
Yeah. I think I've actually seen this, but I don't really remember it. I would have been a kid when I saw it.
It's like from 1943.
Were you an East Side kid?
No, I'm Canadian. Very West, actually.
It's like, you know, they're kind of like the Little Rascals or like Abbott and Costello. And like basically, it's like a group of people who do antics and then they have a whole bunch of movies. And this is one of their movies. But already it started off on a super slow note because like the first half of the movie feels like it's just one of their friends getting married and they're trying to prepare for his wedding and none of them can prepare correctly because they're all incompetent. And it's kind of just really frustrating. It was kind of sad, actually, to see Bela Lugosi at kind of this kind of low point. I mean, yeah. I've seen him in Ed Wood movies and I feel like he had more fun than in this movie. Spoiler alert, Bela Lugosi is living in a haunted house, but actually he's a Nazi spy and they make the house seem like it's haunted. So people don't figure out that it's a Nazi spy base, but that's like 10% of the plot. A lot of the plot is none of them can sing a happy to see you married song correctly.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they should have leaned more into the smaller plot and had more fun with that than, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a bit of a skippable one.
But worried about the creepy house, in my mind, I just imagined the movie The Burbs with the creepy neighbors.
Oh, The Burbs is great.
Yeah.
Much better. I would rather have watched The Burbs again. So even if you're a Bela Lugosi completist, I would say this one is even skippable, even if you really want to see all of Bela Lugosi's movies. It's that he's not even in it very much, and you kind of could tell that he was doing it just for a paycheck.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But
no, it just makes it sad.
Yeah, it actually was kind of sad. It was like frustrating and also sad. It was like, ugh. So I think I gave that a 2 out of 10. I don't know what the 1 was. I don't know why it wasn't a 1 out of 10. I don't know what the extra point was for, but...
It was Bela Lugosi.
Yeah. Yeah, he automatically bumps it up a point, even if it's from a 1 to a 2.
Exactly.
And right after that, we got to High Tension, which is actually really good.
Yeah, I love this movie, except for the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, you know, so it's pretty interesting. It was directed by Alexander Aja, who directed the Maniac remake, and he also did the Piranha remake. I think he's been a producer on a lot of more modern horror stuff. I think it's a French movie,
It's totally a French movie, yeah.
Yeah, it was part of the new French extremism.
Yeah, yeah, and it was a surprisingly solid slasher. The guy who is the villain, he's like a truck driver who's just like a slasher going around chasing this woman and her friend. And it's definitely spoiler alert, because I'm going to spoil it just to talk about it for a second. So if you do want to see it, skip ahead 3 minutes or something into the podcast, because there's a pretty big spoiler for this one. But yeah, the whole thing where it turned out her friend was actually the killer and she was just imagining herself as this horrible killer man. And it was actually just her the whole time. It was kind of wacky, but kind of interesting at the same time.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense in the context of that film. Like, there's scenes where you're like, no, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Especially when the killer had cut off somebody's head and then got head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That happens at the very beginning of the movie. That doesn't make any sense.
Right?
It did feel kind of like a twist for the sake of the twist without a lot of thought into explaining some of the anomalies that might have happened. Yeah. I have one of these movies on my list, by the way, and they did a great job of explaining every single instance of where you're wondering, well, how could it be him? Did a great job of it, but I'll get to that when I get to it.
Sweet. The only thing I thought was interesting, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, but just from a purely psychological standpoint, you know, there's all this stuff where she's like in the closet watching the guy cut somebody's head off and she's like really afraid. And there's a lot of scenes of her watching the guy kill other people. And from some extent, I was saying you could make an argument that it's like some killers when they kill people. They talk about how when they're doing the act itself, they're like outside of their self. It's like not necessarily them that's doing it. It's like they quiet a part of their brain that can't handle what they're doing or something. So just the aspect of, you know, watching yourself be a killer and it like a disassociative identity kind of thing was kind of interesting if that's what they were going for. But that said, that was just me reading into it. And that wasn't really what they said in the movie. So I don't know if that was intentional or not.
Well, that's why the French extremism movement worked, is because they left a lot for you to interpret.
Mm.
Right? With Martyrs, right? I mean, there was a lot there for you to sort of absorb and chew on when you finished watching it. It's like, well, what were they trying to tell me? And I think that's where High Tension worked as well, is it was one of those movies where you walk out going, I'm not sure if I understood that, but I want to think about it for a while.
Yeah, I mean, from a few people I've talked to thus far, it's very rare that you have a movie that has a very ridiculous twist that almost nobody is on board for, but yet everyone still likes the movie. And this is one of those movies. I can see why he directed the remake of Maniac, and like it was a really good solid slasher. I would say if you wanted to do other slashers, it would be a good director to do them.
And we love his Piranha remake.
Yeah.
The Piranha remake is not bad, actually.
It's stupid and fun. And yes. I like stupid and fun sometimes.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And super gory.
And super gory.
And Piranha is a sequel to Jaws.
Mm-hmm. What's next?
So for my last one, I have a horror comedy starring Mark Proksch called Another Evil. And I watched that one on Shudder. And Mark Proksch is the energy vampire from the What We Do in the Shadows TV series.
Oh, nice.
And it's basically just a starring vehicle for him to kind of just be that similar type of character. It's super fun, actually. It's like a guy, his house is haunted and his girlfriend's away, and she hires somebody to clear out the haunted house, but it's like a little bit too woo-woo for him. He's like, I think this guy is full of BS. I think our house is still haunted. And so there's like another guy that he knows about that he wants to get a second opinion on. And this guy he's getting a second opinion on is Mark Proksch. And basically, he's just like wants to be friends. He's like a lonely dude who's like a strange exorcist man. And he's like, hey, you know, mind if I like sleep over at your house? Like, you know, then we can monitor stuff. And it's just like a guy who really wants to be friends with the main character. But the main character doesn't necessarily want to be friends, but he has to have the guy there so he can get rid of the ghosts.
It's like the cable guy, but he's a ghost hunter.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a bit like that, actually. Yeah, and it's pretty funny. I'd say it's worth checking out. At the very least, like, it has some solid chuckles. It's not like the most amazing movie, but it was pretty fun. I was happy to have watched it. It was a good little palate cleanser after High Tension, which is just straight horror and gore.
Yeah, sometimes you need to do that. I had one there where I'm like, I wasn't really interested in it, but I wanted to watch something lighter. So yeah, I get that. I totally get that.
And yeah, it did have some weird moments, though. Like, there were some things where they were maybe trying to imply something, but they never explain it. And I've talked with Leah. It's like, you know, what were they trying to say by that? Because it's one of those, like, they do a little bit of an ambiguous thing, but it's almost, I'm not sure if it's unnecessary or not, or if it's like, you know, makes it great. Sometimes when you add ambiguous stuff to a movie, it almost takes away from the rest of the movie. I feel like this was like that a little bit, but worth checking out. I highly recommend it. I gave it a 7.5 out of 10.
Okay, so what was your best of the week and worst of the week? Although I think we know what the worst of the week is.
Yeah, worst of the week was definitely Ghosts on the Loose. I almost felt bad for counting that one because it's barely even a horror movie. But I'd say best of the week probably was Torture Garden, actually. Or Wizard of Gore. Wizard of Gore was massively entertaining. I think Torture Garden was all around, like a solid movie. Like, Wizard of Gore is a movie you like if you like really good bad movies.
Cool. Okay, well, we're going to listen to a trailer here from his list, and then we'll be right back with Trish's list.
One of man's greatest fears is of something smaller than ourselves. We've never outgrown our fear of them. But now, they have outgrown us.
I made a discovery.
Science has made them bigger.
What the hell is this?
Nature has made them smarter.
We have ostriches, cats, and dogs disappearing all over town.
And now...
What was that?
Man has made them...
We gotta get out of here! They're coming!
Hungry.
Our town is being attacked by giant spiders!
I want everyone to arm themselves immediately.
Ready. spin on terror.
Hey, Spidey!
Thank you.
Eight-legged freaks.
All right, Trish, what do you got for us?
All right. So, starting off this section of it, number 17, Ouija House. If you wanted to know what happened to Misha Barton and Tara Reid, they're here.
Now, there's a Sellen feature right there.
I know. It was dumb. Actually, that was kind of why I wanted to watch it. I'm like, ooh, they're in it. It's a nice, going to be something nice and kind of trashy. This is one of those movies where I was like, it could have been better executed, but they have some good ideas in here. I was kind of surprised by how I was delighted by some of this stuff. There's this house that has been in this person's family, and she's doing like a paranormal like thesis for college. So they're going up to this house that was apparently owned. It's in her family, but she was told never to go there. There's this big secret, but there's like a side story with witches and stuff. So they go there, and basically the entire house is kind of like a Ouija board, eventually, is what they find out. And they do something with it that I thought was quite cool, where is one person gets possessed and then becomes the planchette.
Weird.
Oh, that's cool. I like that idea.
Yeah. So they're like, they ask it a question, and then they grab onto the girl, and she wanders around the house, and she just starts clawing at the wall at certain spots. And when they peel away the wallpaper, there's like a letter there. A letter or a number. And yeah, so, and that, like, at some point, like, there's evil and they're trying to escape it. Yeah, there's like some good ideas here. It just felt it didn't quite gel in a way it should have.
It's one of those ones where I have a great idea, but I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me, is it? Because I love the concept, the whole idea of the house being the Ouija board and the person, possessed person being the planchette. That's great.
Yeah.
But then what you do with it, I guess, is where you have to be a little more developed as a screenwriter.
This sounds to me like an Asylum movie.
It does.
Sam's far more interested than I am, because this sounds kind of stupid to me. But when I heard Tyra Reid, I'm like, is this an Asylum movie? But sometimes those could be fun.
Yeah, no, it was actually good fun. I was quite pleased by it. I enjoyed it.
Because that would have come out around the same time as like Ouija Origin of Evil and stuff, wouldn't it?
No, I think, 2017, I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was around when those Ouija movies were coming out.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
There was a Resurrection and lots of Ouija stuff where it's like, oh, let's communicate and just, yeah, let's make bad decisions in a bad haunted house. I found it on Tubi. So, yeah, you know what? If you want something that's just kind of different, I'd recommend watching it. I'd give it like a 6.
Nice.
Cool.
Because I was delightfully surprised by it. I always bump up a number when it's like, oh, I think this is going to be trash. But then I'm actually surprised.
Yeah, because your lead-in didn't have me, but a 6 is pretty respectable.
Yeah.
I find that sometimes with a lot of movies that are maybe not going to be super great, it's surprising sometimes how some really actually fascinating ideas get shoehorned in there. And it's kind of like, oh, this idea is actually, it's way too compelling to be in an Asylum movie.
It's like, let's take this out and do something with it. And that's kind of what I looked at that and I wrote, that's basically my one comment is about the planchette. And I'm like, yeah, I would like to take that out and put that somewhere with like a wider story about that. I think that would be cool. Oh, have it like the amazing, sorry, now I'm just remaking it. Have it like the Amazing Race, but every team has a planchette. But anyway, that was Ouija House. The next one was Exeter, which I also saw on Tubi. And I was like, ooh, Stephen Lang. Don't bother.
Oh, no.
I like Stephen Lang. I feel bad for him for being in this movie.
Aww.
It's not good. There's a certain point where there's an accident and they think they've killed Stephen Lang. And they did. They obviously did. But somehow he survives this. It's very frustrating in many different areas. They're at this guy, he kind of helps like kind of demolish places. And this was like an old asylum for like children and orphans. And Stephen Lang used to work there and he's a priest. And yeah, you can tell I'm not really into it because I don't like some of the details are just falling away. Because all I remember is like this bad thing where Stephen Lang shouldn't have survived.
Well, how did he almost die?
He gets hit by a car and goes through the windshield.
I know what you did last summer.
Yeah, but I mean, like his face goes through a windshield. That amount of pressure on your head and brain, you're dead.
Yeah.
You just are.
Well, just feel better because he survived to be in better movies.
Yeah. He did. Yeah. If you're a Stephen Lang completist, maybe watch it, but don't be rushing towards the exits to go see it. No. Yeah. So that was Exeter. And after Ouija House, I was like, oh, okay, that's bad. So I'd give it maybe a 4.5. Okay. Not that great.
It's not a 2.
Yeah, that sounds more forgiving than Jeff was.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Stephen Lang is in it. And even though it's really kind of, I have to suspend a lot of disbelief, he's still pretty good to watch. I still enjoy him. So the next one after that was Boulay Brothers Dragula Resurrection.
Oh, sweet.
This is on Shudder.
Yes. And I thought it was going to be a series. So I was like, ooh, I just want to watch maybe one episode. But no, it's like a full, like I counted it because it's like a full movie. And I tell you, it's like horror costume drag. And
yeah, there's like a TV show.
Yeah. And so this one they're doing because of COVID, they've changed a lot of it. A lot of their contestants, they're sort of doing their own thing on their own and then filming bits to send in and show them. And like they're building their own kind of stages for it. But it's, you know, it's fascinating. Even if you're not into drag, this one has a lot of stuff about how like they're constructing things like latex and wire and all these wonderful things. And it's fascinating because even just as somebody who's like a nerd for how people create things, it's pretty good.
Yeah, there's some talented people on there.
Yeah, yep. It's absolutely amazing. Like I would say, yeah, just give it a watch because you'll see some beautiful things.
Yeah, I like that kind of stuff. That's actually kind of why I like to watch RuPaul's Drag Race, to watch how they create their outfits and stuff like that. So that sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
It really is.
The show is like, it's like RuPaul's Drag Race, but specifically horror themed every episode.
Yeah, this is the first time I heard of it and it's amazing. Gotta watch more now.
Yeah, it was really cool to see that they were on, had a little Shudder special, because I think all of the other ones were like super independently produced, like on channels that barely exist and stuff.
Well, I think that the episodes are on Tubi, actually.
Ooh.
They have a compilation of the episodes, because it sounds really familiar, because I almost watched it, and then I realized it was a TV series.
Oh.
So it might be on there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe you have to hit up Tubi for it, because this was just one long kind of movie of it, so I counted it. I can see how it is a series, but it's really interesting to also watch how they do it with kind of the COVID and trying to keep the guidelines, and it's really quite cool.
Nice.
Yeah, so highly recommended. I give that, like, because of the knowledge they drop, at least an 8. An 8 if you want to make costumes. Absolutely.
Yeah, and the first kind of reality competition show we've ever done for 31 Days of Horror. Probably the only one we ever will, but that's interesting.
Yeah, highly recommended. And so if I follow that up by watching Euthanizer, fun fact, I watch it on Canopy, which is a streaming service you get with your library card. And cool. Yeah. Canopy does great stuff. And this was Dutch-Norwegian, but this one, oh, it's horrifying in so many ways in that it could be real. There's a guy, he lives by himself, and what he does is he euthanizes pets for cheaper than the vet.
Oh,
but he's also, I couldn't watch this.
Yeah, but he's also very good about, with animals, he loves animals. And like, there's one guy, he left his dog in his truck and the guy comes into the cafe. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? And he does it to euthanize animals, but he does it he will take them out as quickly as possible, as painlessly as possible.
So he's compassionate about it.
Yeah. Like there's a point where like with the small animals, like he says, he gasses them. And what he's done is he's got his car kind of hooked up where he's got like a panel between the driver's side and what's in the back. And then he's got pipes coming in from like the muffler so that it's just like CO2 and they just fall asleep. But he also plays music for them while they go.
Oh. So it's like a Dr. Kevorkian for pets?
Sort of. But anyway, this one guy who's trying to get in with the white supremacists in town, he takes the dog to him because the dog just isn't behaving. But the guy's not training the dog. He's not doing anything with the dog. So he's getting frustrated for something that's his fault. And so the guy doesn't euthanize the dog. He just adopts it. Like he gets on the wrong side of the white supremacists and something very, very horrific happens. But yeah, the guy, it's then turns into a vengeance tale beyond that.
That sounds kind of interesting, actually.
It's really good. The lead actor is like incredibly compelling. And then there's a woman who's the nurse where his dad is at the nursing home. And there's also like another subplot there that I won't give up too much because it's actually quite interesting. But I would recommend watching it. There's one part that I had to stop it for a bit because I couldn't deal with it, but it's really incredible.
Cool.
I give it 8.5. It stuck with me. It really did. Euthanizer. And you can watch it on Canopy if you have a library card. It's super easy. It's great. And then I followed that up with Uncaged, which I wanted to watch last year. None of the streaming services had it, at least with subtitles, because it was Dutch. This one was through Shudder.
Okay.
It's a horror comedy. There's this lion that's like hunting people down in like Amsterdam. And it's really good. It's hard to classify because you have like this Dutch woman who works at the zoo. She's like a vet. So she's there to help investigations of these people they found like just slaughtered. But then they figure out that it's a lion. And then she brings in an old flame that she knew of from many years ago, who's British. He's very charming. He's like this charming bastard and it's really awesome. I love this actor, but he's lost his leg in another lion attack. So like he's also kind of tracking this lion in like this wheelchair. It's bizarre and funny and great. And I loved it. It was so good.
Nice.
No, it does sound like fun.
It was really, really good. And the lion CGI, you're going to have to let it go a bit because some of it's pretty bad.
Well, and you know what? With horror comedy, I tend to be more forgiving of bad CGI because you know it's supposed to be comedy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah,
it's when you're expecting it to be serious and it's and like CGI is bad where you're going, ah, oh, you're just taking me right out of it. Mm-hmm. But with horror comedy, you're not really supposed to be in it anyhow.
Absolutely. But yeah, I'd recommend watching it. If you can, it's a lot of good fun. What's really good about it is that I could have kind of watched it last year, but you need the right streaming with the right subtitles for when they're speaking Dutch. But because the guy's British, like half of it's in English, half of it's Dutch. But of course, because like in Holland, they speak both. So it's really kind of cool. I love watching a movie where it goes between those two. Because then you realize I haven't learned enough in my life. I should have more than one language.
Yeah. No, I'm embarrassed. Thanks.
I know. I was like, I'm so ashamed. I give it a solid 7.5, at least.
Nice.
It was really good.
Yeah, that's not bad for a horror comedy.
Yeah. And then I followed that up with Psychopaths, also on Shudder. It's weird. It kind of feels like an anthology, but it's supposed to all connect together. It's more of a mood piece than I think a movie. It's beautiful and visually interesting, but I have very little plot to hang my hat on. But there's some really memorable characters in there. There's like several stories. There's this one woman, she captures a man and holds him in her basement. In another one, there's this girl. She's crazy, like bat nuts crazy, who keeps imagining that she's singing on a stage and she's a great star, who's killed this guy's wife and holds him hostage. And then there's one other one I can't quite recall because it sort of washes over you more than you watch it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, no, this sounds more like a visual art piece than anything.
It really is. There's some beautiful imagery. Yeah, when I think of, trying to think like Mandy, where it's like kind of, there's a lot of stuff happening, but Mandy kind of has more of a plot to it, but it's visually a lot's happening.
Kind of like an art house horror.
Yeah.
I have one of those. I have a lot to say about that one, but we'll, that's in the last week, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, this one, yeah. I don't know. It washes over you. You know, I give it like a 6 just to see it. There's one performance that is outstanding and it's the woman who thinks she's giving a great performance all the time and she cracks jokes and she's so bright and chipper and perky. And it's like to have somebody that hold you hostage and you don't know if she's going to kill you and then giggle and be like, oh, dearie me, it's fucking frightening.
Well, if it gets you, then it did its job, I guess.
It really did. It really did. But yeah, so I'd say, yeah, if you're looking for something to just kind of enter you rather than you watching it, this is the perfect movie for that. So after that, I was still on Shudder, wandering around, and I watched The Cleansing Hour. It's not bad.
This sounds like an exorcism movie.
It is. What it is these guys keep doing fake exorcisms, like they're all very highly produced. And the people that they're exorcising are actors until in one instance, they actually get a real exorcism happening. Like the demon enters like their friend because this actress falls through, but then the other guy's girlfriend fills in and then it just ends becoming a real exorcism.
Oh, that old chestnut.
Yeah, that old chestnut. It has a lot to say about internet fame, which I thought was quite compelling, which made me wonder too, is like this thing kind of came out because it gets its power from like attention, bad attention. So you have all these people watching it at the same time. So it's sort of like, yeah, they're kind of working against themselves by broadcasting this. And then like all these secrets come out of what happened when they were children. it's a good watch. But the weird part is you have the lead guy who's like hot priest. It's basically what he's cashing in on. I'm a hot priest. His buddy is a little bit more compelling than he is. I'm like, I just want the second best friend to be the lead of the movie.
I always hate when that happens.
Yeah. The end was very creepy and the end really goes places. You can probably guess like halfway through, but no, you know what? It was interesting. I liked what they were kind of trying to get at. And, you know, for like what budget they had, I have to say they did pretty good, I would say, for what they got out of it. It was pretty good to watch. My eyes now thinking about it are much more forgiving than when I first watched it.
I saw the trailer for it and it did look actually quite compelling.
It is. There's some bits they let themselves down on, but yeah, no, it's pretty solid overall, I'd say.
Nice.
Cool. I'm really looking forward to this next one.
So yeah, that's 6.5, The Cleansing Hour. Now this one, my final one, Bad CGI Sharks.
Yay!
Thank you so much for suggesting this one. I freaking loved it.
Even better. Even better. I saw it. I'm like, oh, Trish has to see this.
I love the fact
that the title is so fucking honest.
It's you know what? It's honest, but I have a note that I've sit here going, they should have hired these guys for Sharknado. What they did with their shark was better. Like they have bad CGI sharks. I've seen worse.
Oh, that's a little sad, but good. That's awesome, but sad at the same time.
I know.
What a strange criticism of a movie is say, yeah, it's bad CGI sharks. I've seen worse. Such a weird criticism.
These guys did pretty good. And it's like these sharks are kind of, they're just outside, just like coming down the street. They're being chased by a shark. It starts off with like kind of this narrator guy. And at one point, the camera kind of pans to like another thing where it's like a little half naked. And to keep your attention, the narrator's like, no, don't go away. Sharks, sharks, there's going to be more sharks. And then it snaps back. And I'm like, yes, that's how you get my attention.
So there's sharks going around on land and stuff?
They're going through the air. Like,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, they're chasing people down streets. There's one guy. They show his living room window. And basically what he does is the beginning scene of Jaws. But you just see him flopping back and forth in his living room.
Oh, I know. I have to watch this. Like,
it's so silly. I loved it.
It kind of reminds me of that really old SNL sketch from the 70s with like,
oh, yeah.
Jaws, like they like rings the doorbell and the guy's like, who is it? It's just like it's every single time it's someone who's trying to get into the person's house and it's Jaws every time he opens the door and a shark chomps him. Yep.
You're that clever shark, aren't you? Sharknado needs these filmmakers. I need these filmmakers. And they had such like silly fun gags, like they're trying to get away from the shark. They're like, let's go over this wall. And so they're trying to help each other over the wall until the other guy kind of walks around to where there's an opening and walks back. It's a dumb, silly gag. Loved it.
It sounds like a cartoon, like a really fun cartoon with bad CGI sharks, with okay CGI sharks.
Yeah, it's a live action cartoon. It's on Tubi. Watch it. Watch it again and again. It's so funny.
That sounds great, actually.
It's so good. Yeah, no, you know what? Just because of it's me and I love sharks, it's getting like a 9, 9.5. I had so much fun with it.
That is so awesome. And it was just a spontaneous thing. I saw it and I'm like, I have to tell everybody about this movie that I've never seen before. And I kind of knew that you'd grab right onto that, Trish, but I didn't think you'd enjoy it anywhere near as much as you seem to.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. It was the best thing. It's my best of the week. Absolutely. 100% the best of the week.
And the worst?
Exeter. Poor Stephen Lang.
Well, with that ringing endorsement, let's run the trailer for Bad CGI Sharks. And we'll be right back.
Emergency.
This is Jason. Now, you listen to me. I know how you cops are, never believing us young, crazy kids when madness is afoot.
There is a shark on land!
Well, floating above it, like a blimp? I'm thinking it has something to do with a script me and my brother are working on. Some sort of voodoo magic or something.
You are leading an adventure based on your own transportation script.
How can you think we have any control in this situation? This is our movie. I'll be damned if we're gonna let some vindictive digital fish kill off the two stars.
What do you expect the shark to look like?
Actually came here and it swallowed my laptop. You owe me a f***ing laptop. It gained consciousness.
Don't you get it? You created those sharks. Your creativity is alive and thriving and
nothing worse than when a shark movie gets too caught up in character dialogue.
Looks like a bad CGI movie creature.
That shark looks great for the budget.
All right, that does sound like fun. Bad CGI sharks. Now, we did put the call out for people who watch 31 Days of Horror with us, and our regular Xavier has sent us his list, and he just basically grabbed a bunch of stuff off his shelf. He has a massive, massive collection. Mm-hmm. He sent me photos, and he just kind of grabbed B through D.
Yeah, his collection is insane. I've seen the photos as well, and yeah, he's... Yeah. You want to talk horror fans. This guy is a horror fan.
Yeah.
He could open a video store.
Oh, easily. Yeah. Easily. And this list is B through D of the things he hasn't seen on his shelf. Starting with Bad Samaritan, Battle Dogs.
Oh, my.
Better Watch Out.
Oh, that movie's pretty good.
Black Sabbath, which I think is an older movie.
Yeah.
It is an older movie, yeah.
Barbara Steele, I think.
Blood and Lace. Blood Diner.
Nice.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Actually, he has it as Blood Dinner. So maybe there's another movie called Blood Dinner, or he just misspelled it. But maybe one of those two. After that, Blood Quantum. That's a Canadian zombie movie. Actually, I was intending to watch it this year, but I just didn't get to it. But it looked quite good because it had a Native Canadian setting. So the virus. The native people were immune to the zombie virus.
Ooh.
I found quite fascinating. So I do want to watch this at some point.
That's great payback.
Yeah. Bloody Birthday was after that, followed by Clive Barker's Book of Blood.
Oh, yeah. A lot of blood here. Yeah. A lot of blood.
There is a new Book of Bloods, or I'm not sure. I think is it Books of Blood or Book of Blood? I think on Shudder now.
Yeah, it's a series.
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's a series. Okay. So, because I remember the movie Book of Blood was not good. Like, we're gonna make a movie out of your framing sequence for your book.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have enough. There was not enough there, and you can tell when you watch it. He followed that
up. Wafer thin.
Yeah. He followed that up with The Boy, and then Brain Damage.
Yep.
Then Brightburn, which...
Oh, Brightburn's great.
I covered it last year. I did not like Brightburn.
No. But I also liked Man of Steel, so there you go.
Okay, yeah.
That answers an awful lot. Yeah.
No, I did not like Brightburn. It was... A hardcore comic book reader. I found that movie pretty fucking insulting, actually. He followed that up with kind of a doubleheader. I don't know if it was on the same disc or what, but he had a doubleheader day with Brush with Death and Harvest of Fear. So hopefully that was a good day.
Hopefully, yeah. It would suck if you watched two bad movies in the same day.
Now, this might sound familiar. He followed that up with the horror comedy Burying the Ex. We watched something somewhat similar.
Yes, we did.
Not that long ago. And he followed that up with Byzantium.
I was almost going to watch that for this month, actually.
That's one that I've always been meaning, sort of wanting to watch as well, but it sounds really interesting. I'll have to talk to Xavier and see what he thought of it first, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know it's one of Leah's favorite vampire movies, actually. And
I really liked it.
With the Byzantium BYZ, we've now entered the seas. With Cabin Fever Patient Zero. I hated the first Cabin Fever. I just hated it. I would not watch another one. But there's actually a remake, so we might watch that for you guys.
Patient Zero is Carrie Andrews, the comic artist. He directed it.
Yeah, and I was tempted to, because I know Carrie, and I'm always mad when he makes a movie and then he doesn't call me.
Because you met him while you were in film school, didn't
exactly.
you?
Exactly. He hadn't made a movie yet. He was asking me how to make movies.
Oh, wow.
So I'm a little pissed off. He actually shot one here in Alberta, and everybody's like, hey, did you work on that? I'm like, I didn't even know he shot it.
Gosh darn it, Carrie.
Yeah, we're fucking tagging him in this Twitter tag.
Right. Following Cabin Fever was Case of the Scorpion's Tail, which is a cool title, followed by The Cell, or just Cell. I'm not sure if it's The Cell or Cell. But
no, I think it's the Stephen King adaptation.
Oh, then okay. Yeah, that I remember that. Then Chamber of Horror. Was that one of those Amicus anthologies, Jeff? Do you know?
That title sounds really familiar, but I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
It's a pretty generic title, so I could see how it could be Amicus, but it's hard to say with a title like that. It could be any sort of horror anthology.
Yeah. And then he followed that up with Shandu the Magician. Then he watched The Changeling, which I'm surprised he hasn't seen. Peter Mendek movie, fantastic film, which was made here in Canada. Go watch it. It is fantastic. I think it's 1980?
Yeah, 1981. Yeah. And I would say it's good, but it's not the most magnificent thing you've ever seen.
No. I mean, I was, when I saw it, I think I was in my early teens, and I was kind of blown away by it. But it's a slow burn, moody thing. After that, he watched The Children. Don't know anything about that.
Oh, wait. I think that was the one I watched that really freaked me out, because, I mean, it's children and they're evil.
Oh, well, yeah. you get freaked out walking down the baby aisle in the grocery store.
I do. Children are scary. Let's not forget that.
He followed that up with Color Out of Space, which I really wanted to get into my list, but didn't quite happen. Looks great. H.P. Lovecraft. But this was the recent Nicolas Cage one. You can catch it on Netflix right now.
We could do a remake episode for that, actually.
We might.
Because Die Monster Die with Boris Karloff is the same story. So.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really? Cool.
Then he had another double feature, which was Count Yorga and Return of Count Yorga. Yeah. Next day was another double feature, The Creep Behind the Camera and The Creeping Terror, as we creep through the seas. And then The Crimson Cult, followed by Crimson Peak. Well, I'm not sure why the Crimson Cult wasn't living on the Crimson Peak, but it seems like a natural place to settle down if you're the Crimson Cult.
You'd think.
And then we enter the D's with The Darkness. There's a lot here. I don't know what the hell they are.
Yeah. Some of these I have not heard of at all.
Yeah. And then Daughter of Dracula. And I think I was talking to him when he was watching this one. And I thought it was a Hammer film, but I don't think it is. But, you know, everybody made Dracula movies back in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And then Day of the Dead, Bloodline.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah. I saw that one. I'm like, ooh, I might have just skipped over that one. And and then he ended with Deep Star 6, which was... Oh. I like Deep Star 6. It was another underwater horror movie.
Yeah.
But right around the time, I think it came out before The Abyss, actually. But
yeah, it does. Yeah. It came out shortly before Leviathan and The Abyss.
Yeah, but it was like the first of the three movies that were coming out like almost simultaneously.
Yeah, that brief moment in time where it was like a thing, right? It was where they had the underwater stuff. But it seems to be coming back, so.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have more 31 Days of Horror lists for you next week, but now it's time to move on to Sam's eights for this week, 17 through 24. What do you got for us, Sam?
I have fun. I had so much fun. This is probably my best week of the month. And I started it off with a fabulous film. This is my favorite watch. Maybe not the best film, but my favorite watch all month. I watched a French film called Sodium Babies. I don't know where the title comes from because it doesn't seem to have anything to do with the movie itself, but I love the title. So I watched it and it's fabulous. The Decca brothers are incredible filmmakers and writers. It's hard to explain this, but it starts off almost feels like a sort of a Sin City, Frank Miller kind of look, but they change the look depending on the era of time they're in and the setting they're in. It's really fun to watch. It's very, very visually engaging.
Nice.
And being in French, you're reading it. So you're definitely looking at the screen. So you're not missing anything. The story itself is pretty straightforward. It's starts in the 70s with this young man who's just come back from his military service. And he is basically kidnapped by a vampire clan and turned into what they call ghouls, which is basically, they're basically like Renfields where they're servants of the vampire, but he's an enforcer. So his job is to take out members of other vampire clans and humans who are getting too close to the vampire clan, that kind of thing. And as it moves forward through time, he's becoming more and more disenfranchised with his role. He wants more responsibility. He wants to be more involved in the business end of things rather than just being a goon. And eventually it leads to his rebellion. It's really, really well done. It's more of like a vampire action film than a horror. Nice. But if you want something that's just a blast to watch, watch it. It's on Tubi. It's free. Free, okay. I say. When people were asking about movies to watch over 31 Days of Horror, I kept saying, watch this. Please watch this because it is just so much fun to watch. I gave it because the story is a little – it doesn't quite live up to the cinematography. I gave it a 7.5 out of 10. Wait a minute. I gave that one an 8 out of 10. Sorry, I was looking at the wrong spot on my list. It was an 8 out of 10. Like the transitions from one style to another, it's never jarring. It just feels really organic. Like I'm giddy over this film and please, please, please watch this.
Cool.
When was it made?
Definitely going to do that.
I apologize. It was 2009.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's one of the older films that I watched this year. By far my favorite watch of the year. I followed up with a UK film from 2015 called Lost a Girl. This one here, I need to watch again because it's really interesting, but I don't know if I was in the right frame of mind to be watching it at the time. It starts off with these young girls and one girl pushes another girl and doesn't realize there's a car coming and the girl gets hit by the vehicle and dies. And that's the beginning of the movie. And you're like, okay, well, what does this have to do with the rest of the movie as it's moving forward? But it follows the girl who pushed the other girl as she's an adult and she's sort of moving on with her life and she's starting to become an adult and gets this really great job with this corporation. But as she's settling in, she gets involved in this conspiracy. Somebody's messing with her computer. She gets locked out of her computer and it sort of really changes tone really, really quickly. And it's really hard to see where it's going, but I think people should watch it. It's really smart. And I'm not going to spoil the movie for you because it does take you on a really interesting journey. And even though I wasn't quite in the frame of mind to watch it, I still gave it a solid 6 out of 10 because I do want to watch it again to sort of see how it all builds up again. I would say that this is a movie. If you're into something that you have to sort of think about, I would watch this one.
It's fascinating.
It is. It really is fascinating. And like I said, I think it's something that I should have seen earlier in the month when I wasn't sort of starting to sort of hit that bump where you sort of burn out a little bit.
Fatigue.
The fatigue that we do get every year because we're now about 2/3 of the way through the month. You do start to get a little exhausted. And sometimes watching some of the stuff you have to think about is hard on you. But that being said, I had more of that. This was another one that I cannot praise enough. It's a Russian film from 2017 called Dead Lucky. This is the one that I was referring to when Jeff was talking about Attention with the protagonist is the killer twist. And I'm ruining it. I'm sorry. I'm spoiling it for everybody, but it's so well done. And it's so funny. It is ridiculously funny because the lead character is really inept all the way through the movie.
Nice.
And he's been brought in by his brother to be part of this assassination crew. right there. Funny. and they're all weird. They are all very, very weird. You have this sort of general guy. He's like a former KGB general, but because he's lost his job, he's now like a professional hitman. but he's arrogant and acts tougher than he is, and he's hilarious. Then you have the gadget guy who builds a freaking harpoon gun, and it's just this ratty claptrap thing, and it's fucking hilarious to watch. And the dialogue between them, even though it's in Russian, it still translates really well as you're reading it. It's funny. This is where my unintentional theme resumes, because there is a character in there whose method of punishment and torture is to castrate people.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So there's only one on screen in the movie. So that brings me up to four, I think, Jay. I think, like, on screen actions.
Right.
You might be at four.
I think I'm at four actual on screen genital mutilations. Yay.
I don't remember where we left off.
Yeah, it's really fun. And then, just to add an extra element to all of it, like so basically this hit squad has been hired to take out this sort of up and coming rock star for some reason. So they go to a tropey cabin in the woods because the rock star is celebrating his birthday and they're going to kill him at his birthday party. And hilarity ensues. There is also a serial killer who pops up halfway through the movie, who starts taking out the hit squad. And it's really confusing at first, but as the story progresses, they explain everything. This is beautifully explained. And you're like, I was not expecting that. And there's more to this movie. Even though I've spoiled part of it, there's still more. And I highly recommend it. Yeah. Please watch this. It gets a solid 7 out of 10 for me because it is fairly low budget and it does show, but story wise, it is worth the watch. And
so this is the one you were saying, like it's like high tension, but like they actually show you.
They explain everything. Every single kill that doesn't make sense at first, they explain exactly how it happens.
Cool.
And yeah, it's really deftly handled. I think if they had more money, this would have been like a 9 out of 10 for me because it was just so deftly handled and well written.
Nice.
And yeah, I really want to see more from this director, but this is the only film credit I could find for him for North American film credits. And the director was, his name is Vadi Valilu. I'm Ukrainian and I still can't say his name. it's Vadi Valuin. I can't say it. But yeah, look up Dead Lucky from Russia in 2017 and watch it. Again, all my movies are easy to find because every single one of them is on Tubi.
Nice.
Every single one. So I gave myself this challenge and I am really pleased with what happened this week. I found my groove.
Tubi came through.
Tubi came through. Yeah. And curating a little bit more carefully definitely makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to number 20. I came to Canada for Inspiration from 2016. This was really interesting. It was one of the smarter films I watched. It's about this writer who's undergoing a divorce. And so she buys or rents this old house out in a small community. And it's really hard to explain, but she accidentally kills one of the members of the town. He asked her for a ride and she said no. And somehow he got hooked onto her car. So she dragged him home behind her car.
Oh.
And that sort of sets up the pretext of the whole film, but it moves and twists in so many different directions that you're not really sure what's happening. And it's lovely. It is really this well acted. It's well shot and it keeps you wondering, okay, what's going to happen next? And the only reason I watched this is because it had a plague doctor mask on the cover. That is the only reason I watched it.
Oh.
and it plays into the film and it's just, but it's not what you think it is. And it's, I don't want to say too much because I want people to watch this.
Nice.
This is another solid movie for me. This is a good 6.5 out of 10. This is one where it's, again, because it twists on you so many times, you're never really sure what the twist is going to be. And even after it's over, you're still not sure what the twist was because more happens. It's wonderful.
Wow.
So that was Inspiration. This was probably, the next one was probably my worst movie of the week. And it was really short. Like, I think it was only 1 hour and 10 minutes, but it was a long 1 hour and 10 minutes because it is just gory. It is brutally gory. It's a movie called Brutal. Brutally gory. Brutal. from 2018 is a Japanese film. This one here, this is going to up my genital mutilation count to double digits.
Oh, wow.
Brutal.
Yes, brutal.
The clue was in the title, Sam.
It truly is. It was not what I expected. So the synopsis of this movie suggests is basically a serial killer who hunts in Japan meets up with a female serial killer. And a relationship ensues.
Ooh.
So it's, yeah, I know, right? Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
And it was sort of. So yeah, is pretty much all I can say about this movie. Because, yeah, it's just basically scene after scene of these people. Starts off, the first like 20 minutes is the male protagonist murdering a bunch of women. And he's sexually repressed. This is important to note, is that he picks up women and then as soon as they start to get intimate with him, he kills them. Then the next 20 minutes is the female serial killer, who is, her motivation is sexual as well. She castrates the half a dozen men in the 20 minutes that sort of tell her story. She's obviously been sexually abused at some point in her life and is now acting out, and she's murdering all these men is in retaliation. And then they meet in a bar, our two serial killers, both of them thinking, oh, they picked up their next victim. And they start to develop a relationship, and it's really brief. It's like 4 or 5 minutes, and then they're back at one of their apartments. I believe it's his, because his apartment is kind of like a kill zone for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this horrific, horrific battle between the two of them. And again, more genital mutilation, blood everywhere. And it was confusing and not at all what I was expecting. And I wish I had gotten more of the sort of the idea of two serial killers meeting, falling in love kind of thing, rather than what I got. That being said, it wasn't terrible. I just didn't really think that it did what the synopsis promised. So it gets a 5 out of 10 from me. But again, I'm not sad I watched it, but I certainly wouldn't watch it again.
When you say like she just cuts off a lot, is there just like a penis cutting montage at the beginning of the movie?
It's a montage of her picking up men, getting them to get undressed, and then graphically stabbing them in the groin.
Oh.
And there's, like I said, there's easily a half a dozen of them.
Wow.
Yeah. So plus there's genital mutilation in their final battle as well. So yeah, I'm up to 11 or 12 for sure. Some forms of genital mutilation in one movie. It was maybe a little more traumatizing because of the theme that was starting to show up by this point.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. There's a note here. Yeah. They meet, they become soulmates. She kills him and somehow she gets pregnant.
Okay.
This is the part that's really, and there's a big question mark behind this for me, because they never appear to be intimate, and it would be very difficult for them to be intimate.
Yeah.
Let me just leave it that way, because there's things missing that preclude intimacy. Like her vagina is sewn shut.
Ew.
Well, that'd do it, you'd think.
You'd think.
Well, now you have an exit problem.
And the initial process problem as well, especially considering he has been castrated as well.
Oh. Yeah, sperm can get into the vagina if it's like outside of it, but I mean, it still doesn't have to break through. I mean, if it's just sewn and hasn't grown together,
but if he has no junk,
yeah,
there's no sperm.
So I'm now thinking of it's like a Jesus and Mary, like Immaculate Conception type of deal, but from the devil.
Yeah. So like I said, I was moderately confused by the end of this film because it just didn't quite make sense to me. Like I said, since it started off with some sort of like interesting lead-in stories, you have these two very prolific serial killers with very clear motivations. And then the third act just didn't really bring that together in a satisfying way. And then, of course, added the confusion of this immaculate pregnancy that makes no sense because it doesn't really feel like it should be part of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brutal Japan 2018. It was my lowest score of the week for sure. It was a 5 out of 10. Because it was beautifully shot. Like, it looked great. And I can't complain about the performances. It's just the script. And it didn't quite live up to the rest of the film.
Mm.
So it was trying too hard to be arty, I think.
Yeah, and that can be a problem.
Number 22. I go to the UK for this one. Watched The Harsh Light of Day from 2012. This was a really interesting take on the vampire genre and trope. And the revenge flick. Because there's this writer, another writer story, sorry. But his wife and child are murdered and he's left disabled. He can no longer walk. It sounds very much like Upgrade, but it came out before Upgrade. Yeah, several years before Upgrade. So it's a very similar sort of plot setup to a later film. That's where it deviates he's in a wheelchair. He's bitter. He's trying to kill himself. Like he's just not a happy man. And then he gets approached by a friend who is trying to sort of help him get through his funk and help him move on with his life because his wife and kids aren't coming back and he's never going to walk again. Or so we think. But his friend is actually part of a clan of vampires and they approach him and suggest that he can have his legs back and he can have his revenge if he wants to become a vampire. And it's beautiful because it's not just, okay, yeah, sure. he takes some time to think about it, and it's really well told how his reservations about making this decision and what it would mean to him as a person to go through this. And I liked that aspect. It wasn't, yeah, everybody wants to be a vampire. No, not everybody does. But he does in the end decide to go through the transition. And then after the transition, he still has trouble with it. His humanity gets in his way of his revenge. It's really, really beautiful. And there's this sort of slash protagonist antagonist, the vampire who turns him. His character was really interesting, and they keep things just vague enough that you're like not entirely sure what this guy means when he's saying some things. Until the end of the movie, it all ties together really beautifully. It's a really great commentary on humanity and what it means to us in a lot of ways. And the ending is definitely not what you expect. And it's beautiful and sad. And I really, really, really loved watching this movie. It was another one of my favorite watches. Oddly enough, they were both vampire films this year, but it was definitely worth the time I spent on it. And I would, another one that I would highly recommend. This one gets a 7.5 out of 5 from me.
Out of five?
It sounds wonderful. Like, it sounds like it explores a lot of stuff.
It really does. And the acting is excellent. Like, there's no flaws in the film. I actually feel like I almost could have dealt with more storytelling because it was so well done. I think I would have gotten a higher score out of it because
awesome.
I felt like maybe they didn't have enough time to really tell the story they were trying to tell.
Well, it sounds like you could have a series and that would work. Like 6 episodes of this happening would totally work.
You know, it could. It could. I think it could be revisited as a maxi series for sure. So number 23, I went all the way over to Thailand and watched Take Me Home from 2015. Another film I just really enjoyed watching. It's visually, it was really, really, really well done. The story was an interesting take on the haunted house story. It's the story of a young man who has lost his memory, and they don't know how, or they do explain later on in the movie how, but he doesn't know how he lost his memory. He just shows up in this village as a very young man or older child. And he lives with this village, but he doesn't know his name. He doesn't know who he is. He doesn't know where he came from, but he starts to sort of get this homing instinct, hence Take Me Home. So he goes back to this. He sort of goes on his little journey to find his home, and he finds it. And when he arrives at his home, he's greeted by somebody who recognizes him, and he's introduced to his sister and her new husband and their children. But nothing is exactly what it seems. There's a sort of a murder suicide happens. And then as our lead character tries to leave the house, he finds he can't leave. Every time he gets to the front gate, he pops back into the house. So he's stuck in the
That's so weird.
It is really weird, and it's really beautifully done. And then as the movie progresses, as he moves deeper into this, the horrors and terrors of this house, the house deteriorates. It tells the same stories from different points of view as well. And each time you see it, you're seeing the house. At one point, you see like this full dining room as beautifully lit and everything's elegant and beautiful. The next time you see it, it's a little shabbier. And then you see it again and it's in complete disrepair. And it's just the detail that the filmmakers took to sort of tell this story visually as well as through the actions and dialogue. I mean, I can't tell you more about it because it just would ruin it. Again, it's on Tubi. Watch it. There's so many great movies on there if you do the work. Oh, and I forgot to mention who directed The Harsh Light of Day as well. So Oliver Milburn was the writer-director for that one. For Take Me Home, the director was Kongiat Komsiri. This one is another solid 8 out of 10. Just really enjoyed it. And then my last movie of the week, this is probably the oldest movie I watched in the last half of the 31 days. I watched Santa Sangre from Mexico from 1990 by Alexandre Jodorowsky. I can never say his name. Jodorowsky. There we go. If you've never seen one of his films before, you could certainly start with this one and not be disappointed. There's a very giallo-esque feel to the whole story, very stage play-y in a lot of parts, but it's a wonderful Oedipal tale about a young man who grows up in a circus and mayhem ensues, and he ends up essentially orphaned, and he grows up as a performer, and you know, it's so hard to explain this movie, but it's definitely worth watching. I mean, there's a serial killer element, there's a spiritual element, there's the Oedipal element, there's a love story, and it's all tied together really, really well. There's some really, really bizarre visuals, like a huge coffin for an elephant. This does feature the underlying theme. There is a single castration in this film.
You found all of them.
I don't know how.
Wally of genital mutilation.
I wasn't looking for him. It's not like it says in the synopsis, hey, somebody's dick gets cut off in this. It just seemed to be the luck of the draw this year. But overall, like I said, genital mutilations aside, this week was outstanding. There's a reason that Jodorowsky is so well revered for such a small body of work, because what he does is uniquely him and is beautiful to watch. It's really hard to explain what you're watching. Like, all I can say is watch it. Guess what? It's on Tubi. So please, yeah, it's another one. If you want something that's just a really fun visual trip, definitely watch this one. My favorite was definitely Sodium Babies, even though it maybe wasn't the best film of the week. It was my favorite. And my least favorite had to be Brutal.
Cool. Well, let's break into another trailer here. This is 8, a South African horror story, which will be my first for the week.
There are old legends that talk of the place. It's a very special place. There is a crossroad here. Those who are chosen by the ancestors can communicate with death.
Some African cultures say the Sangomas can talk to your ancestors.
Witch doctors.
That's just superstition, Mary.
It's not just superstition. It's real.
Enough about Sangomas before we all get nightmares. Something in the yard. Something strange.
Hey!
I'm sorry,
sir.
I just need to rest.
Letting him stay in the shed.
We'll walk on.
Hello?
We'll quiet wingles. Moves are woody.
Life is death.
I am the wonder.
Death is life.
Always searching.
Life is death.
You are in me.
Death is life.
And I in you. And you are mine forever.
Death is life. And life is death.
That was the trailer for 8, a South African horror story, obviously from South Africa, also known as the Soul Collector in Australia and other parts of the world. This is basically about an old man who's fated to collect souls from a mistake he made in the past and winds up living on this farm, assisting this family that had just moved into this area. It's the area he's from, and so the locals are very wary of this dude because they know who he is. At night, the old man would go out to collect souls, and he's essentially trying to seek atonement by trading his daughter's soul for another's. This thing is beautifully, beautifully shot. It's directed and written by Harold Holscher. The cinematography on this is gorgeous to see these South African terrains. Beautiful, beautiful movie. And I would put this up with anything that Hollywood's doing right now. Like, the acting is so good in this movie. I can't pronounce half the cast's name, though. Shishimo Seeb, Ing Beckman, and Kita Luna. I was really impressed. It was a great way to start this week. And I'd give it a solid 8.5 out of 10.
That's a really good start to the week, for sure. We both had really good starts to our week there, Jay.
Mm-hmm. Highly recommend this one. It was that good. I've got a pretty good week as a whole. That's kind of how my month went, as I was bragging from the very first episode.
Yeah, dick.
Number 18 was Snatchers from 2019, written and directed by Steven Cedars, Benji Kleiman, and writer Scott Yaukishian, starring Mary Nepi, Gabriel Ellipse, J.J. Nolan, and Austin Freiberger. This one's basically, it's a horror comedy about a status-obsessed teen who has sex for the first time. Kind of sucks for her because this jock that she has sex with, I guess he was poking around on his vacation in these, in this Mayan museum and awakened some sort of alien that infected him. And she is 9 months pregnant overnight with an alien.
That sounds like an angel episode. There's an episode where Kristen Carpenter's character, she gets impregnated by an alien and gives birth overnight.
She gives birth to an alien who's trying to create more aliens, and these aliens kind of control people like they're head lobsters or head crabs and like Ratatouille. There's one scene with the vag cannon. I'm just going to say the word vag cannon and let you imagine what that means.
Well, it's right in theme, Jay. Genital mutilation all over the place.
Vag cannon. No.
Can we make a t-shirt out of that somehow? Maybe? No?
I don't know about that one.
Patreon only. Patreon only.
Yeah. This was a pretty damn funny movie out of the U.S. And I think they just kind of took a web series and stitched it all together, because I found several versions of this online and they all look like the same thing. So I think they just kind of stitched a web movie together, but it's wonderful. It really was a great time, and I'd give it a solid 7.5 out of 10 because it really amused me.
Nice.
Okay. Now, number 19, always got to throw in an animated film into my list because nobody else will.
I have trouble finding animated horror.
I almost did.
Well, I've had this one for a while and it's about time I took it off the shelf. It's called Dracula, Sovereign of the Dead, otherwise known as Tomb of Dracula from 1980. Yes, based on the Marvel comic of the same name. It was based on the comic by Marv Wolfman, Gene Colan, and Tom Palmer. And it crams like years worth of story into it. So naturally, it's fucking insane. So Dracula, he assumes control of a satanic cult and takes their sacrifice, but winds up romantically involved with her, and the scenes of urban Dracula, you know, out shopping and stuff are just fucking hilarious. Just domestic Dracula.
Sound great.
But he does father a son with her who winds up dying and then is resurrected by God to become a kind of superhero that's supposed to fight Dracula. And of course the cult is pissed that they lost their sacrifice. So the good guys and the bad guys, they all hate Dracula. The wife at one point tries to commit suicide, and this thing's insane. I don't know where to begin. I could have wrote like three pages of just like fucked up notes about this movie. You know, definitely a darker Marvel movie.
Interestingly enough, I did almost watch this because it is on Tubi.
It's wild. So there you go. You can see it free on Tubi. I noticed you can find it on YouTube as well. But weird ass movie. It's so strange, and I laughed my ass off at it. I don't think I was supposed to, but I just kept going, what? Through the whole thing. And just for the sheer insanity, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Nice. It does sound fun, though.
It was, yes. Next is number 20, Sputnik from 2020 out of Russia by director Igor Abramenko with writers Oleg Mavich Chico and Andrei Zolotarev, starring Oksana Akshina. Basically, a lone survivor of a spaceship incident has returned home, and there's an alien hiding in his body. And this woman is brought in to investigate this and figure it out, because the Russians are trying to cover this up. They treat their cosmonauts as heroes, and it does kind of separate the ideal of being called a hero and actually being one.
Nice.
Yeah. It's set in 1993. Very slick. Looks like a Hollywood movie. Great CGI on the aliens. Very unique looking. They feed this alien convict that's living in its body, and it kind of comes out at night to feed. And there's this cover up that's going on, and the main character, she's trying to work within and without of the system at the same time, trying to get out of this. Like, okay, these guys are doing some horrible shit here. They should just kill this fucking thing. Or at least reveal to the world what they found. But they've been parading this guy like he's a hero on television, but they've been keeping him in a cage this whole time. It was interesting because the cosmonaut initially is unaware it's even inside of him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you know what? Great movie. Gonna give this 9 out of 10. That's how good it was.
Really?
It was that nice. Good.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I was looking forward to hearing what you had to say, because I remember you were excited after watching it. So it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. I was kind of thinking it might be Russia's answer to Aliens, but it's not. It's its own little thing. And I think that's good that they didn't try to emulate an American movie. And it's very uniquely Russian. Like, it doesn't lose its identity in the filmmaking by trying to look like an American movie while still maintaining its heritage. Number 21 is called Possessor Uncut from 2020, written and directed by Brandon Cronenberg. And I was mainly curious to see if he had what his dad's got. And he does. he does have it in spades. This is starring Andrea Riseborough from Mandy. So you're going to probably know it's pretty fucking weird. And Jennifer Jason Leigh, Christopher Abbott, Sean Bean's in this a bit too. Basically, there's this agent who works for a secretive organization and uses a brain implant to jump into somebody to make assassinations. And to kind of jump back and to cover their trail, she basically has to commit suicide of whoever she's in. And she's having trouble doing that. And she's been doing this for a while. And you can see it's wearing more and more on her as she's kind of losing her own identity. There's some kind of trippy stuff that's metaphors for what she's going through. But they're very clear visual metaphors as well. So some people might say it's artsy fartsy, but because they're clear and not muddled, I don't think it hampers the film. And interesting experimental stuff definitely has the body horror that his dad's known for, and he's carried it over with. And it favors like in-camera effects and has some pretty shocking realism with what he's portraying, which is almost a hallmark of a Cronenberg at this point. Really interesting movie. I think it was really solid, well directed. Looking forward to seeing what Brandon Cronenberg does continuing his young and new career. He's very good. 8 out of 10.
Nice. Yeah, you did have a solid week. Yeah, and this is another one of yours that I was interested in hearing about, because I've been seeing feedback about it from Twitter and stuff like that, and I wanted to see what your thoughts were. So yeah, now it's a must watch for me, I think.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. Very moody. So I went for something a little lighter next. And I went with Necrotronic from Australia from 2018 from writer-director Kia Roach-Turner. And this stars Ben O'Toole, Monica Bellucci, Caroline Ford, Tess Halbrick, and David Wenham. It's basically about another secret organization of magical beings who hunt down and destroy demons that have infested the internet. So these demons can possess people through their mobile devices and things like that. And Monica Bellucci's kind of the central demon of all of this. I would describe this as kind of like if Men in Black and Ghostbusters and Shaun of the Dead and The Matrix just had a little orgy, and this would be the result of that. There's one character who died 3 times, and another one that died at the beginning. It was a ghost for the rest of the movie. Somebody's head was stapled back on. There was a girl when she was resurrected, her body's like 3D printed and they use her like her body like it's plastique. Like there's some insane shit in this movie.
It sounds very Australian. I want to see it.
Yes. I'm usually like that with Australian movies. I'm like, I am going to get some weird ass shit out of this movie. And I sure did. Not the best one of the week. Like it's fun. It's a guilty pleasure, but it's not great. I think it tries a little too hard to be funny, and some of the acting is shaky. Solid 6 out of 10. It's still fun.
Yeah, and you know what? I always say if you can get a 6 out of 10 out of a horror comedy, it's a pretty solid horror comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not expecting art. You're expecting fun, and that sounds like, well, that's what you got.
Yeah. Number 23 was one you've seen, Sam. You actually might have talked about it in 31 Days of Horror. It was called You Might Be a Killer, or You Might Be the Killer.
Yes, I did do that one last year, and I had a blast with this one. I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, this was written and directed by Brett Simmons and stars Fran Kranz, Allison Hannigan, and a bunch of other people.
How did I know you were going to say that?
Well, they're the only two really who are starring in this movie. Everybody else is kind of incidental. But it's basically about a camp counselor who's suffering from blackouts and calls his friend because he keeps finding all these people in the camp murdered. He doesn't know what the hell's going on. And they're trying to work this out over the phone. Turns out Fran Kranz is picked up this mask that possesses him and kind of turns him into a Jason-like stalking killer. So it's kind of this commentary on slasher films. Honestly, I think it overdoes it with the slasher jokes in jokes.
A little bit. I agree with you on that one.
Yeah.
But it sounds like Jim Carrey's The Mask went real dark.
Yeah. You know, like, okay, you've got one of the stars from Cabin in the Woods, and I think he's trying to strike that again and trying to find another cult movie like that. I don't think this one lands as well as Cabin in the Woods did, but most things don't in horror comedy. Yeah. It's all right. I enjoyed it. Honestly, there's the theme song for You Might Be the Killer is way better than the movie is.
Nice. Yeah. I think Allison Hannigan is actually the high point of the movie because she's so much fun.
She is, but honestly, I felt like her and Fran Kranz are too old for the roles they're playing.
That was my
especially Allison Hannigan. Like, he's kind of might be able to pull it off in his mid-30s, but you know, Allison Hannigan's like my age pushing 50. It's starting to show, and it looks like they're supposed to be playing younger 20 somethings, and they're not pulling it off as like they should.
But you know what? If this movie happened in real life, let's be honest, we are the people that our friends would call.
That's true.
We are that role.
And Jay, don't forget, she does own a comic book shop. Does that sound like anybody we know your age?
Well, yeah. Maybe. It wasn't really a comic book shop. I wasn't sure what kind of shop it was. It was a weird pop culture shop.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's a similar precept, just pointing that out.
That's true, I guess. In real life, yes, this probably would happen in my life.
Yes, I was going to say.
This character.
Yes, if I were blacking out and finding dead bodies, I'd probably be calling the police first, but then you. Yeah, no, I mean, he's done better horror comedies, certainly. Mm-hmm. Cabin in the Woods, Bloodsucking Bastards was also great.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely fun, worth the one-time watch. It's not very long. It's an hour and a half, so you could do worse with an hour and a half. But, you know, 6.5 out of 10. So my horror comedies weren't really landing great. But I ended the week for number 24 with The Hunt from 2020. This kind of was a victim of COVID, so it had a theatrical release, but was cut short because of the COVIDs. Basically, 12 strangers wake up in a clearing with no knowledge where they are, that they've been chosen for a hunt. And this is a movie by Craig Zobel and written by Nick Cuse and Damon Lindelof.
Oh, cool. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it stars Betty Gilpin, Hilary Swank, and Emma Roberts in here as well. Initially, it keeps you off balance initially because you're not sure who your main character is going to be. It takes a while and it keeps like, okay, we're going to be following Emma Roberts. Nope, she just got shot in the head. She's out of here.
Nice.
And it does that a few times. It's like, okay, all right, it's going to be that chick that ran off in the other direction, isn't it? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, now we're good.
I was thinking it was probably Betty Gilpin because she's on the poster.
Yeah. I hadn't seen the poster. Well, I had seen one, but I think it was just a pig. And there is a pig. But basically what's going on here, these people have been chosen for a hunt. We think it's random, and there's this urban legend that the rich are conducting a hunt of regular people. And on the surface, that's what it looks like. But it is an urban legend, and the movie itself is about cancel culture and PC politics. So when this is associated, this behavior is associated with some of these rich people that actually aren't doing this. It's just something the internet made up, and it starts affecting their lives, and people are getting fired for this. Then they're like, okay, the people who started this rumor have been commenting this on forums and YouTube channels and Twitter and whatnot. They round them up and conduct this hunt. And really interesting movie. Gotta say, you know, I was earlier, I think in the month, where I was talking to Sam privately, kind of criticizing Blumhouse for making bland movies. Not this year. This was really good, and I like what it had to say. And
Blumhouse is back?
And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, well, if you watch some of those Blumhouse direct to Amazon movies, maybe not.
Yeah.
Some are better than others. But yeah, The Hunt really made a good impression. It was a great way to end the week. Solid 8 out of 10.
Cool.
The fact that it went after podcasters and influencers, like, okay, gotta watch what I say on this show.
Yeah.
We never malign anybody who doesn't deserve it.
That's true.
No.
That is true. But overall, I had a good week. Probably the best movie I did watch was Sputnik, although I really enjoyed 8, South African Horror Story. That was also really good. You know, worst one out of a good week. I feel bad even calling it the worst one because it's not even that bad, but Necrotronic didn't quite live up to my expectations. But overall, great week. I had a good week.
A good problem to have is trying to figure out which one you'd have as the low point when you can't figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's going to even be worse next week.
Nice.
Oh no, next week's going to be so easy for me to find my words. So easy.
No, but, my list is so well curated this year. And I'm like, oh man, I just been going from one good strength to strength. Yeah. No twos. I had my four, but that was
awesome.
Overall, yeah, a great week. I felt like, man, I was really hitting my stride in the second half of the month. And overall, like outside of Sam's, just rules the theme here with the genital mutilation, let me be clear. I didn't see
it. And it's not over yet.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I didn't have a very clear theme in my month other than, man, I had fun. I had a lot of fun, and it continued this week for sure. Anybody else start developing their themes? Did you find something? Like, by the third week, things should be kind of coalescing. Anything as clear as Sam's?
No. No.
Yeah, not really either.
You know,
well, I noticed you had some like exorcism type movies quite a few this week, or a couple anyway.
Well, I don't know. Like I have some of them are like I have a theme kind of per week, but I don't know. I think my overall theme, this is the funny thing, it's not really a theme, is that there's always, I think in every one of these, even if it's a bad movie, there's at least one line of dialogue that's entertaining to me.
Right.
Like, for instance, CGI sharks, there's one whole bit of line where this girl's talking to the guy and he's coming in and he looks like shit because he's just been in a car accident. She's like, did you lose your shoe? Yes. Did you get in an accident? Yes. Do you want me to stop asking questions? Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, I really like the trailer for it. So I might have to watch that on my off hours because it does look like fun. Doesn't look great, but it looks like, this, you know, I've sat through 6 Sharknado movies. I can do worse.
This will kick the ass of any Sharknado movie. Just telling you that.
Nice.
That sold me because I have zero interest in the Sharknado movies, even though I know they're stupid fun.
I resisted long. So long I resisted. And then Trish and I did the shark special. Go listen to that episode. It was fun. And then I just like, you know what? I'm going to bite the bullet and I'm going to watch all of the ones that were up to that point. And then I just kept watching them as they released. And I think there were 2 more after we did that special. So
yeah,
I don't know if I'll ever go back to watch them again, but watching them once was fun. Okay, guys. Well, that was it for this week. Next week, we'll be returning with week 4 of 31 Days of Horror to wrap up what we've done. Sorry, it's been a month long, but it didn't work out the way I wanted it to, but we still got to share it all with you. We've got a few more lists to share with you from our fans that have joined us in the 31 Days of Horror Challenge next week. You can also grab the shirt, I Survived 31 Days of Horror. I'm hoping I will. But you can get that shirt at our TeePublic store, and you can find the link on our Wix site. Sam, what's the Wix site?
It is invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
And don't forget to follow us on our social media at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com. If you want to email us your suggestions, your corrections, and your comments, and definitely your fan challenges when we get back to our comparisons and our remake episodes, which is only a couple of weeks away. We'll be getting back to it, and we're nearing the end of this season as well. So we'll try to squeeze a couple fan challenges in before the end of the season. Otherwise, they will trickle back out into January. But we have a lot of fun taking a break and watching all of these movies during 31 Days of Horror. And it's always interesting to see what unique path we're going to take. And Sam's trip down the Tubi rabbit hole has been very interesting to me.
It was very interesting to me, too. I mean, it started off rough and very, very shaky, and I was getting a little bit nervous. But I found the groove. And I've been I ended up with a really decent month overall. So I'm really happy about that experiment.
Yeah. When we started doing this for the show, I started making a list of things I wanted to watch so I could just dive into it at any time when we did this and cross one off. And I'm like looking at my list. I'm like, man, I could go for another 3 months just off my list. And not having to go hunt for anything. that's how long the list is. Every time I hear about another good horror movie and just add it to the list.
Nice.
Okay. Well, we'll catch you next week. We'll wrap this up with week 4. And until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I always return as Jeff Omega.
And we are out of here.
A deal.
Surrender to me now, and he shall be unharmed. We have a bargain.
But I'm afraid.
Do you fear the pain, or what is beyond?
Both.
The pain, I can assure you, will be exquisite. As for our deaths, there is nothing to fear. Our names will be written on 1,000 walls, our crimes told and retold by our faithful believers. We shall die together in front of their very eyes and give them something to be haunted by. Come with me and be immortal.